NetFront Presence is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Welcome to NetFront Presence. I'm Jeff Gordon of the Post-Dispatch, joined by our beat reporter, Matthew DeFranks. And since we last spoke, Matthew, there's been some activity. We've spent month after month after month, and then really going back to Jim Thomas's period, year after year after year, complaining about the construct of the Blues defensive core. Well, there's been a number of changes since the summer, and the latest move to bring Cam Fowler in really solidified this group.
Yeah, so on Saturday morning, the Blues traded for Cam Fowler and a 2027 fourth-round pick, sending Jeremy Biakopatuka, an ECHL defenseman, and a 2027 second-round pick to Anaheim. The Ducks are retaining retaining $2.5 million of Fowler's $6.5 million cap hit, so Fowler will count $4 million on the Blues cap. And to me, this move basically signaled two things. One, that they are very uncertain about Nick Leddy's status for the rest of the season. I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, Fowler's cap hit that they brought him in at is the same exact cap hit that Nick Leddy is at $4 million. I don't think that is a happy circumstance there. So I think, you know, he's been out since October 15, missed more than 2 months at this point. Had a couple false starts. I feel like the Blues are maybe just as confused as the rest of us are about what his timetable and what his return looks like, because, you know, when it first happened in mid-October, it seemed like it was a day-to-day situation, and obviously it has turned into much, much more than that. And so that's the first thing that pops out to me about Nick Leddy's status. And the second thing that I think is, this is a signal that the Blues aim to contend for a playoff spot this year. I think that was somewhat of a given, given what they did this summer. Some of the guys they brought in, you know, Suter or Matthew Joseph, some of those guys that aren't in the 23-year-old age range, right? Bringing in those guys this year and wanting to get back in the playoffs after missing the last 2 years, I think this is another move that signifies that they want to contend for a playoff spot this year, while still trying to allow their prospects to develop and to reach the NHL in the coming years. So that's what it signals to me. As far as the blue line overall, I think they are still old. They are still an old blue line. Next year, they will be an expensive one still. If you think about what happens when Torrey Krug is available, or if Nick Leddy's still available, they'll still be both under contract. And that's in addition to Fowler, who's under contract for next year, plus Parayko and Falk. So that's a lot of money tied up to some guys for next year. And we'll see how it all shakes out. But, you know, for this year, I think those two things on Leddy and the playoffs are the ones that I kind of tease out of it.
Yeah, I think the what I take away is that, you know, Fowler is a pretty good defenseman. I mean, this is not an all-world player, but he is more of a top-four guy than Nick Leddy was. Nick did a really solid job. We talked about it week after week, being put into a tough scenario. Cam has been more familiar with that type of a workload, more relied upon. You know, yes, he's 33 and the downside of his career, but he's been in that more of that position in the past. And Philip Broberg coming in has shown more ability to be an all-around defender, more quickly than I think a lot of us imagined. And again, he's not a top four defenseman, but he can play the part. So now you've added Fowler and Broberg to Parayko, who's had a bit of a renaissance after pushing past his back injury. And Justin Falk, who's in the twilight for sure and having a tougher time maintaining that workload. You know, that's a better four. Not that it's an elite four, but it's a better four than they've had in the past. And it's what they'll have for next year anyways, as they try to figure out how quickly these other guys develop.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is they mentioned, you know, putting so many minutes on their top four guys in the last few weeks, Suter, Parayko, Broberg, Falk. And they don't want to keep doing that. I mean, they're putting 22 to 25 minutes a night on these guys, and the third pairing wasn't seeing too much ice time, whether that was, P.O. Joseph, Scott Perunovic, Matthew Kessel. Like, those guys clearly weren't trusted at the same level as the other guys were. And so now when I look at their defensive makeup, instead of having four guys with big minutes, they like can have five guys that can take on big minutes, right? And maybe spread those out a little bit more. I think we're going to keep seeing an in-game rotation of pairs. It's not going to be new guys every single shift, but in the last few games, we've seen situational use from the Blues coaching staff and putting different guys together in whether it's an offensive situation, defensive situation, after a penalty kill, after a PK, trailing, leading, whatever it may be. They've kind of mixed things up, and I expect them to kind of keep doing that, honestly, depending on game situation. And the other thing that Jim Montgomery mentioned was that he feels that this is a diverse defensive group. And when you look at it, you have guys with different skill sets, whether it's skating, length, offensive creativity, just they have a bunch of different skills, even to a lesser extent, handedness, even though you lost a right-hander with Matthew Kessel going down to Springfield. But they do have a lot of different things that they can do with this defensive core and moving them around, putting them in different situations and with different partners.
Yeah, we'd be remiss if we didn't once again give a shout out to Ryan Suter, who 39 years old and with something like 2 million games in the NHL, really stepped in and shouldered a ridiculous load there for a stretch and still is going to play an important role. How does he do it? How is it possible for him? And then how is it possible that he does that? And then on the when it's his turn to talk to the media, he doesn't seem like he was even tired, after a game. I mean, how is it possible?
Yeah, well, he keeps himself in great shape. I mean, I think you have to when you're close to 40. I mean, he turns 40 next month, and
Oh.
he's the oldest guy in the league, oldest skater, I should say. I think Fleury's got him beat by a little bit, but oldest skater in the league. And the thing that, like, when I covered him in Dallas, the thing that the Stars management talked about was how easy he skated, and I think that's still true. He still moves easily. It might not move as fast. Might not move as quickly. I think you can look at the NHL Edge data and see that he's one of the slower defensemen out there, but he does move easily. And then when he's in front of the net front, he gives as good as he takes in the dirty areas, sneaky cross checks and things of that nature. And it's fun watching opponents kind of try to mix it up with him after the whistle. And for him, what'd you say? He's played in 2 million games, so he's probably been in 4 million of these scrums before.
Yeah.
But it just seems like another day for him in there. And I think he's being asked to do something that's tough. During the time that Leddy was out and Suter was on the top pair with Parayko, I believe he was playing the most 5-on-5 minutes per game in the league. He might have been second, and the only reason I say he might have been second is because his partner Parayko would have been first. So took on a big heavy workload and did okay with it. I don't think that's a sustainable experience having him do that night in, night out for 60 games. But the fact that he was able to step in and do that, and now they can shelter him a little bit more, give him 17 to 20 minutes instead of relying on him to play, 24. I think that's a better usage for him. And, I think the other part is he's going to be playing in another Winter Classic. I think that's important for, his career experience. I'm trying to think if he's played in one before. I don't think so, because he wasn't on Dallas when they had theirs. He wasn't in Minnesota when they played the Blues. Might have played outside when Minnesota had that outdoors game before, but if my memory's right, I don't think he's played in the Winter Classic. He'll hit 1,500 games, and obviously he still wants to win a Stanley Cup, and I don't think that's happening this year in St. Louis, but those are kind of career milestones that he has to look out for still.
What did you see from Matt Kessel this year? He's the odd man out for the time being. Came up, played quite a bit last year. Drew Bannister had him in the minors, had some respect for him, and the team ran low on defensemen last year, and he got a chance to play some, started this year in the rotation, but then was in and out of the lineup with the additions they made. I don't know that there's a high ceiling there, but can he raise his floor?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. Like he's not going to be out there running the power play, putting up 40 points from the back end. That's just not who he is. But I think what we saw last year when he was in the NHL was a guy who was physical. He was making the right reads. He was making plays with his body. And this year, I haven't seen that as much. I think in the last few weeks, you see him try to step up in the neutral zone and a guy slips past him or a guy kind of turns a corner on him driving towards the net. And it's not every game and it's not a lot, but when it does happen, you look at it and say, well, that didn't happen a ton last year. And so I think, yes, I think the Blues were looking for a little bit more out of him and his play. That's why he was in and out of the lineup for some games. I know he played the majority of them, but there were some games he was still a healthy scratch just because the Blues wanted a little bit more out of him. But in this case, I think he was more so a victim of circumstance where they made the trade on that Saturday morning. They need to clear a roster spot. They can't waive anyone because they wouldn't clear waivers in time for Fowler to be added to the roster. So that takes away whatever other options that they were thinking about in terms of waivers. And the only guys that were waiver exempt on the roster were Zach Bolduc, Jake Neighbors, and Matt Kessel. So obviously, Neighbors isn't going down. Bolduc has played very well since Jim Montgomery took over. And so he hasn't left the lineup. And suddenly you look at Kessel, who was, I believe, three games away. If he had played three more games, he would not have been waivers exempt. And he would have required waivers to go to the AHL. And so I wonder if that's a bit of the timing of this trade as well, where the Blues are looking at it and saying, hey, if we want Fowler, if we need to add Fowler, we're running out of time if Kessel plays three more games and suddenly we need to waive someone in order to create a roster spot. I don't know that to be true, but just looking at the timing and the numbers of Kessel's waiver status, it could have been a factor in the decision-making process.
Yeah, there aren't too many coincidences, are there, man? I mean, actually, given how much attention is paid to the salary cap and managing that, and it's going to be interesting to see, again, what happens with Nick Leddy on this, just what the injury is and so forth. It just seems like, I don't know, is this a back or a core muscle thing that's hard to pinpoint versus something like a knee or an ankle where you usually get a handle on what's happening going forward. And what happens with him? Does he come back? If he comes back, we talked about him before down the road, and Armstrong made alluded to it. At some point, they may move people to go the other way to regain some draft capital if things don't work out this season. Hard to say what'll happen with Nick, but for now, he just kind of like, nah, just have to see what if anything changes.
Yeah, and Doug Armstrong, when he spoke to reporters in Dallas over the weekend, quick shout out to Derek Gould, who filled in for me. He just stayed after the winter meetings. He just stayed in Dallas, became a little Texas resident for a little bit longer, covered some hockey like he did in the old days, and had a casual trade go down. So shout out to Derek. But when Doug talked to Derek and others in Dallas, he was like, yeah, Nick Leddy could be back next week. He could be back in a few months. Like we don't know. And I'm sure he knows more than he's letting on. But for him to say that publicly, I think it does lend some credence to the uncertainty that surrounds Nick Leddy at this point. And I don't know what his value would be. I mean, obviously he takes on a lot of minutes. That's valuable for a lot of teams. But there is also the fact that he would be coming back from a long absence. He does have 4 million on the cap this year and next year, and he does have a no trade clause that he would have to waive to be able to be traded this year. So certain factors go into that, I'm sure. But yeah, interesting point that he brought up in terms of maybe recouping assets.
Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design is offering 40% off plus an additional 15% and free installation. Schedule your free consultation today. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN for details. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like getting right out of bed late for work, yet your hair looks immaculate. No blow dryer, no comb, no sculpting gel. Just a flawless look. As if you walked out of your house and straight onto the cover of a men's fashion magazine.
Good morning, Steven. Oh, have you done something new with your hair? It looks amazing.
They don't have the slightest clue you were half asleep drooling on your pillow not 10 minutes ago. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Looking at next year, I think of, what is it, $23.5 million, somewhere like that, with the veteran D-men under contract for next year. That's a lot. And part of that's Torrey Krug, and you wrote about the procedure he had, and it's way too soon to wonder or to project whether he makes it back. But the reality is the procedure he had is very difficult to come back from and perform as an NHL defenseman. He would be what, the first to do something like this with that particular surgery to if he were to make it back successfully and carry a workload, just because the nature of it, repairing his ankle so that he can go through life without pain, then puts a lot of other strain on other parts of the joint that really it's going to create a challenge. So long story short, he faces a really uncertain future for next season and beyond. And I think that may play into this willingness to take Fowler for another year.
Yeah. I mean, there is that uncertainty and the procedure that he had done, it was not, I mean, it's something that the records are, the public records are, I guess, a little bit hazier on, that we don't know how many players have actually had this done. So it's hard to say how many players have returned from it, right? It's not like the Jack Eichel situation where you could see pretty clearly that, not a lot of guys had the artificial disc replacement, and he was going to be one of the first ones to do it. We don't know that with Krug. Obviously, it's a difficult surgery that costs him a full year and is going to limit kind of the way that his ankle moves. I remember when I talked to a doctor around that time, they were talking about how this surgery would limit the way the foot flexes, I guess, side to side. Because the ankle moves up and down and side to side. I guess this one would limit the way it would move side to side. So obviously you need that to skate. And, the thing with Torrey Krug is that he's been counted out his entire career, wasn't drafted, free agent signing out of college. And a lot of times these free agent signings out of college are kind of lottery tickets. You don't know what you're going to get out of them. And then he's made a career out of it, being an undersized offense first, kind of scrappy guy on the back end. And so it's in Krug's personality to kind of want to overcome this and prove, people wrong. So yeah, I'm sure there is some uncertainty there. Obviously we've talked about the uncertainty with Letty. I don't know if that dips into next year or not, but clearly there's something that they don't like about that situation. And you mentioned the cap number with those veteran D, and just doing some quick math. I mean, Falk, Krug, Parayko, all at 6.5, and we're in a world where all these guys end up coming back, right? Where everyone's healthy, no one gets traded. These are just the veteran D, over 30 years old, I guess. So you have Krug, Falk, Parayko, $6.5 million. You would have Fowler and Letty at $4 million each. And then I think the underrated aspects of all of this, Ryan Suter is on a league minimum cap hit. He's making $775,000. But his contract does have performance bonuses. He's got $2.225 million in performance bonuses. And a little cap breakdown, I guess. When teams are using LTIR, as the Blues are, and they end the year over the salary cap, which the LTIR allows you to do, then the performance bonuses accrued in the previous year, they roll over to the next year, and those count against those next year's cap hit. So what I'm saying is Suter's $2 million in bonuses, could count against next year's cap because of the way that the Blues are using LTIR this year. And so let's say he cashes out all of his bonuses except for the ones where the let's say he just cashes out all his bonuses, right? That's over about 30 million. It's $29.725 million in cap space to Falk, Krug, Parayko, Fowler, Leddy, and Suter's bonuses. And so it's a lot of money to guys that are getting older. And obviously that will be the last year of some of those guys' contracts. And Suter might not even be on the team next year, but he would still count against the cap if the LTIR situation remains the same. And if Suter hits those bonuses.
All of this plays into why they, the Nick Leddy situation. He would, after all this time off, he's like an LTIR candidate with an uncertain future, but you have to be careful how you use that.
Yeah, there's a lot of teams. There are a bunch of reasons why teams like to avoid using LTIR. One of them is, performance bonus overages. One of it is you can't accrue cap space when you're using it. And one of it is it also makes it tougher to recall players from the AHL. When you recall guys from the AHL, you have to include whatever potential performance bonuses they would earn. You have to include that in addition to their cap hits. So, just taking an example, Dalibor Dvorsky, he's made his cap hit is 918, 333. So less than $1 million, but his potential performance bonuses are 550,000. So the Blues would have to account for that too, when they recall him in the new year, if that's a possibility. So these are things that every team has to deal with in thinking of LTIR, and it's just one of those things that the Blues are dealing with as well.
And this was the point when I have to remind our listeners that Matthew DeFranks was a finance major in college, and
Graduated with a finance degree, I'm no longer a major.
it's a degree, a finance degree from a reputable university, Notre Dame, where I, on the other hand, scraped by as a B plus student at Mizzou with a journalism degree, and got below 50% on my algebra final and still somehow got a C in that class, which tells you what happens when you take math one at a state university. So moving on to the Blues and the forward situation, there's this upgrade on the blue line is certainly noticeable, and the goaltenders have been playing well of late, but Matthew, this I don't need a finance degree from a prestigious university to note that they could use a little more scoring. And they got some guys they're trying to wring a little bit more out of who are veteran guys who are making a little bit of coin. And in the supporting cast, that just aren't making it happen right now.
Yeah, I mean the big players are showing up for the Blues recently. Jordan Kyrou's got goals in his last four games. Robert Thomas has a 7-game point streak, but that really doesn't tell the whole story about how well he's played. I think it's 13 points in those 7 games, so almost 2 points per game. He had a couple 3-point games mixed in there. He's really been a catalyst for the Blues offense. Played in all situations as he should be doing. And then the other one is Pavel Buchnevich, who I believe he has points in his last 9 games, I want to say. It's not an official point streak because he did miss a couple of games in there due to injury, but in the last 9 games that he's played, he has a point. Could be 8 games, but I think it's 9. I don't know. But whether it is or not, those guys are the ones that need to show up for the Blues and really carry them on a lot of nights. So those are the high-end skill guys that would be, some of the best players on a lot of teams in the league, right? And to see them do what they did on Sunday against the Rangers has to be a very encouraging sign for the Blues to have each of one of them score a goal, particularly after they didn't have a very good game in Dallas. Thomas struggled at the faceoff dot. They didn't have a lot of puck possession. I know they had the goal right after the power play ended, but the rest of their game wasn't up to the standard that they had set for themselves, and that kind of changed on Sunday, where they got going a little bit more and produced. And that's the good news, right? The bad news, I think, is Brandon Saad, who was a healthy scratch in Dallas, who is 14 games without a goal, his longest drought since he became a Blue. And today against New Jersey, he'll be on the fourth line. Elliot Friedman reported that the Blues have had him out there as wanting to trade him for quite some time, and it makes sense. I mean, he's a guy who's not producing. He's making $4.5 million. The issue is that he's not producing, and he's making $4.5 million, and he has a no trade clause, and he's 32 years old, and he signed for next year as well. So there are some hurdles to getting him traded, but it is someone who the Blues need to get going. They've tried to move him up and down the lineup. They've had him on the power play, and he hasn't missed the power play. He's tried the carrot with the power play, and they tried the stick with the scratch, and we'll see how it affects him moving forward. But he's a guy who has not been producing for the Blues, obviously.
Yeah, the tough thing for Brandon, the contract clause aside, which is of course critical, but this would not be an ideal time for him to move, as far as with the, he just, and of course it wasn't for Cam Fowler either, right? With his family situation. But I don't think he's dying to move given his circumstances at home. But boy, something's got to give. This has been a guy who's just been, while not a consistent scorer because he tends to score in bunches, he was always lauded through his career for being in the right place at the right time and doing the right things game after game and being predictable. Unfortunately, he's been predictable, but predictably like a step behind a lot on offense right now. And as well as, Matthew Joseph could certainly do more. Texier could do more. The guys that are in and out who have had some burst of offense in the past in the NHL while not being consistent players, these are guys that have at times have played up in lineups. And they're gonna have to get something out of those guys too.
Yeah, and yeah, Saad has a 2-month-old daughter, is his third child, so he's got three young kids, including an infant. And as you mentioned with Fowler, I believe he told reporters in Dallas that he has a 2.5-year-old and that his wife is pregnant. So it's real life. It's real life for some of these guys and some decisions they have to make. And clearly Fowler made the decision he did to be in St. Louis, and I think we'll have to see what happens in the future with whatever the Blues decide to do with Brandon Saad.
Okay, last thing here on the net front. The Blues set to play the Devils before they head down to South Florida and continue their very rough schedule with a really tough couple of assignments before getting to Detroit ahead of the holiday. This last time they played the Devils, Buchnevich suffered his lower body injury. Bennington played well in goal. The Blues got a victory. That's a really good Devils team over there that's playing some pretty good hockey, and this is going to be another challenge for a team that has found a way. What is it now? 6-2-2 under Jim Montgomery. Not always pretty, seldom easy. They've had success, but boy, again, this game, the next two, just the challenges keep coming.
Yeah, and that game to me was one that's was stolen by Jordan Binnington, right? Like if we're being completely honest here, they did not play very well in that game. They did not play very well in that second period, and Jordan Binnington kind of led them through 32 save shutout. I think they were probably badly outchanced and outshot by the Devils in that game. And really, when you look at this stretch as a whole, the 10 games under Jim Montgomery, I don't want to make it sound like there hasn't been a difference, because I think there's been a noticeable difference in the way that the Blues have been, I guess, I don't know if carrying themselves is the correct word, but winning breeds positivity, which breeds good feelings. And one of the things that the players talked about with Jim Montgomery is his positive attitude. I think that all breeds itself, right? But the Blues have the number one goaltending duo since Montgomery took over. Just looking it up now, at 5-on-5, Blues goalies in the last 10 games have a 944 save percentage. number one in the league. And so that's contributing to a lot of the wins. Even if you think about, Bennington stole a point in Dallas, stole a point against Philadelphia, probably stole 2 points in New Jersey. Like there have been some really good team games. I think that first game in New York, the game in Winnipeg, I think the game in Vancouver, those were all really good games by the Blues as a team. But there have been times where the Blues have needed their goalies to step in and win them a game, stealing some points, and they've been able to do that pretty well. And so I think that's been a big factor in the last 3 weeks for the Blues. And yeah, and just one more thing I wanted to touch on before we wrapped up here. Did speak with Drew Bannister last week on Friday afternoon, and talked to him about his time with the Blues, what he was feeling after getting fired, and kind of feelings he has towards the organization right now. And he was very clear in saying, "I'm not bitter at all towards the group. They gave me a lot of opportunity. 7 years inside the organization gave me a chance to become an AHL head coach, become an NHL head coach." And it was very, very clear that he didn't hold any resentment or bitterness towards the Blues, given the way that his exit went. After 22 games as a full-time coach, hiring as the Blues hired Jim Montgomery a week after he got fired. So, talked to him for about 20, 25 minutes. He's up in Thunder Bay with his family, and he'll start to get back into the game next month, where he'll go around to different junior teams in Canada and the United States, and kind of mentor their coaches on how to maybe tweaks they could do in their game or how to run practices, things like that. And he'll also be doing some things with some unemployed NHL coaches, watching video, taking on special projects amongst each other, and then doing some video calls that he said will probably happen about once a week. So he's got some things to stay involved with the game. And I think for now, he just wants to see how things go and look at it in the spring and summer and look for his next job then.
Well, I did mention to my wife, I enjoyed your reporting on that, and I appreciated his comments, the way he handled that. I mean, it's a difficult scenario. You just get this bomb dropped on you in the hotel lobby, and not that it came as a complete shock under the circumstances, but still, the way he handled that reflected very well of his character, and I think it will also speak to his future because, he's going to get he has a reputation in the game. He's earned it. He certainly helped it by how he's handled this scenario and how he's going to go forward. And I don't think with a guy like Doug Armstrong, when he looks at remarks like that and sees how Drew's handling this, that'll be helpful for Drew as well because Doug does wield a lot of influence in the game. So, but it was very, we should all be able to handle situations with that much grace when things happen that happen in business, right? So, I was impressed, and I like Drew. And people have to remember, this is a guy that was away from his family for the bulk of the year, really, when he was coaching. And he sacrificed a lot being away from the wife and kids to do this thing that he loves doing. And I think St. Louis should pull for the guy. Nice guy, tough circumstances, did what he could. If this thing ends up being a success story down the road, the rebuild, then he will have had a hand in it, which I think he rightfully claims some credit for. Gave himself a little pat on the back for the development of the younger players, and he should. So that did jump out to me too. I'm glad you brought it up, Matthew, because I've been in a situation where the Grim Reapers come through the door for one reason or another, and this can be difficult. So shout out to Drew. A reminder to you, if you're listening to this on a podcast app, that this podcast and all of our other cool extra content, videos, podcasts are available on sdltoday.com. That's the digital version of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Please support local journalism and keep doing what you do, enjoying our content. Until next time, for Matthew DeFranks, I'm Jeff Gordon. This has been the NetFront Presence. See you later.